Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. We are broadcasting live from the Heritage Radio Network TP at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. We have a fun and interesting day. I'm sitting, and to my left is my pal and co-HRN person, Kat Johnson. And Kat and I, we have an interesting day today, but we're going to start with a very interesting guest. So, Kat, let's set up the show for everybody.
Yes. So, today's our third day of broadcasts, and we just happened to see one of my favorite people to run into at the festival. I feel like we bump into each other all the time. Most recently last night at the Dewberry party. And she's one of my favorite chefs as well, Katie Button from Asheville, North Carolina.
Probably one of the only few people not drinking.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Katie's restaurants in Asheville are Curate, which is a Spanish restaurant, and then Night Bell, which is more Southern influences.
Yes.
Correct. And Curate, since we last spoke last year at Charleston Wine and Food, you've since expanded Curate. Tell us a little bit about that expansion.
Sure. Yeah. A few years ago, you know, the building next door to Curate, which originally used to be all one building, came available and as a space. It was a yogurt shop that was in there prior. And we just saw that and we're like, oh my goodness, this is an amazing once in a lifetime opportunity. We seized it. My husband, Felix, and I, who operate our restaurants, had always had this vision for Curate, and we just didn't have quite the space to be able to complete our vision. And then as soon as we were able to tack on this extra additional kind of square footage, we immediately decided to put in a vermouteria, which is, you know, a vermouth bar. And we've got sherry, cider, and vermouth on tap, and, you know, a jamon charcuterie area and our cold station over there. And it's really beautiful, but the main reason was to entice more people to try more different beverages that are available, particularly in the wine world. I mean, sherry and vermouth.
Is anyone else doing it there? I mean, you're like the first guy to have vermouth and sherry and that variety of stuff, right?
Right. I mean, everybody who comes in is pretty much like, oh, I thought you could only mix vermouth in cocktails.
Right.
And
that's what my dad told me.
Right. Or that it would be disgusting on its own, you know?
So one of the other things that you focus towards is Spanish wines. And logically and obviously, you know, Spanish wines. Spain is a very, very hot growing region, not weather-wise, but, you know, as far as the wines they're making, the qualities. Talk to me a little about, you know, what you have there. Are you able to get the wines you want there? You curate wines. Tell me about the list, some of the things, and then I want to ask you, you know, personal faves at the restaurant.
Sure. So, my husband is from Spain, and, you know, we both have a deep love of the wines of the country. I mean, they're so different and diverse all across the region, and they're doing some really interesting things. And I also think you can get a really great value, and the value even goes up with the more higher end wines, you know, just, the value's there from the
quality to the value.
Yes, exactly.
For the region is
amazing.
Incredible.
It's incredible.
Right.
So, you know,
and we use the word on this show and in the wine world, we use value instead of cheaper.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Right.
It sounds much nicer.
Right.
Right. But you know, it feels the same in your pocket. Right.
Right?
So
yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's good. When we were opening a Spanish tapas restaurant, you know, my husband and I, we really wanted to serve only Spanish wines. You know, we were like, we're focusing on Spain. We will be 100% Spanish. We even went so far to kick Portugal out. I feel bad for them. They've got great wines too.
You may want to reconsider.
I know. I think
Come on.
So. I think
it's
so.
It's not like you're bringing Riesling in.
Exactly. Exactly. And, we're able to put together this amazing list just in one country. And we have to train our service staff to be able to educate people as they come in, you know, to say, okay, what style of wine do you like? All right, we're going to guide you this way. We also went so far when we created a map of Spain on the back of our wine list.
Like Ribera and Rioja and Ribera Sacra.
And we put all the regions and describe a little bit about them. And then on our wine list, we have them listed by region. So that, you know, if you're interested in kind of learning a little bit more about the background, the land, the terroir of the area you're ordering your wine from, you can do that.
So do you get any pushback because people come in and they go, I don't want Spanish wine.
I want something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I think if they come into a place like that, they're kind of open to the experience.
Right.
Tapas is about, you know, trying different things. Mm. But do you get a little of that? Or
sure, of course. And then, but until they taste something.
Right.
Right? And then if you can make the right recommendation that matches what their expectations are, then you've won them over, because then they're looking at this amazing, delicious wine that they love that's new. And I think when you get people to try new things, they leave feeling even better about the experience.
Right. And probably may go out and buy it and try it.
Absolutely.
I mean, restaurants have a big influence on exposing people mm-hmm. to wines.
Yes.
That's why wineries and distributors love to get in the great restaurants, because you walk away from that experience like, that was great. What was that wine? You know,
right.
You'll get that a lot.
Now, I have a question, Katie. What's the By the Glass program like? Because it is a small plates restaurant, and it's nice to be able to kind of, you know, also change your wine throughout the evening.
Last I checked, we had about 40 wines by the glass, you know, in addition.
Not at one night.
Oh, yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, you know, we're just able, you know, we train our staff enough to be able to rotate through them. We date them and stay really on top of it. But I think that's important, because when people are coming in and they're unfamiliar, they don't necessarily want to, you know, go down on a whole bottle.
Right.
Right?
I was going to say, by giving them that many offerings, the diversity, you need to have a big by the glass program.
Right.
Because people may have one or two glasses, don't want the bottle. So that's very smart.
And it's lovely to go to Curate and have a nice long dinner with lots of plates.
Right.
Lots of glasses of wine.
Now, I want to ask you this. Spain is very well known for their reds. There's an incredible amount of reds. Tempranillo, all these other grapes. The whites in Spain are incredible. I mean, I would assume for the by the glass program and the bottle program, there's probably more reds than whites.
Right.
But talk to me about some of the whites. I mean,
sure.
And also, when you could and were, you were tasting stuff, right?
Right.
So tell me, you have to have a certain amount of whites to match with the food. What kind of whites from Spain are exciting to you, or are you carrying?
Yeah. So some of the ones that I am really excited about, I mean, from the Rías Baixas region, Albariño, you know, is like, you know, probably the most well-known, perhaps, white wine.
But hold on. On this show, we try to teach people stuff.
Okay.
So I want you to go
back.
So
don't go with that one.
No. I want you to go back. Rio Baixas, I want you to say it slowly, and then I want you to spell it.
Okay.
For our listeners. Okay? Because they'll go in, they won't know. They don't know there's an X in there.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Rías Baixas, it's spelled RIASBAIXAS.
Right. And that is a region of Spain that's making wines.
Right.
Now, continue.
In the Galicia kind of region of Spain, the north, western portion of Spain. And, you know, they make some wonderful whites, Albariños, which pair so well with the seafood that's coming right off of the coast of Galicia. I mean, clams and percebes and, I mean, just, which are barnacles. Explain that, percebes. And, you know, crab. And, I mean, there's like a whole range of amazing seafood coming from that region.
So Albariño probably is the most exciting white.
Yes. White Garnacha too, though. I'm going to throw that in there. I love, so from the Empordà, the Alt Empordà area, Altemporda, you know, that's in Catalonia. It's north of Barcelona, kind of heading up towards the border of France on the eastern side of the Mediterranean. And I love White Garnacha. I think, you know, when it's it has done in stainless steel, maybe there's like a little bit of oak, and it brings out this sort of earthy and maybe a little bit of some petrol notes. I love that. It's
because the Albariño is sort of a hay yellow. It's crisp. It's acidic.
Right. Yes.
This sounds way more, you know, complex.
Yes, it's more
body. A
lot
of Albariño is not an oak.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little of that oak. The petrol thing makes it interesting.
Yes.
What's good pairing for that? You said shellfish and all
that?
Yeah,
I mean, I think
probably heavier stuff too.
In every place where the wine's grown, it's the food of that region that's going to match the best. And, you know, I mean, they have wonderful prawns that come right off the coast of the Costa Brava, which is that section of Catalonia, and some of the best, if not the best in the world, and beautiful fresh anchovies and
Good with anchovies.
Yeah, they're really good with anchovies.
I'm going to bet you're probably one of the only restaurants within 50 miles that's carrying a Spanish white Grenache.
More than 50,
I would say. Think, right? That's the cool thing about, you know, what you're doing.
Yes.
Now, I just want to ask you about Reds. Let's jump to Reds. You know, there are the famous wine regions, Rioja, Ribera del Duero. There's a very hot area, Ribera Sacra.
Yeah.
Are you bringing in wines from that
Absolutely.
Region?
Absolutely. We have wines from Felix, my husband, runs our wine program, and he's really careful to ensure that we have the full range of representation of all of the areas.
Right.
I think some of the interesting wines are coming from some of the, volcanic regions on the islands of Spain.
Like Canary?
Yeah, exactly. Like the Canary Islands. So. I think there's some really interesting things going on there.
Have you heard of a winemaker? I think it's three guys, Envinate. They'll make wines on the Canary Islands. They'll make wines in Ribera. They're very cool, but they're going into those interesting regions. You have Canary Island wines?
Yes.
Very cool. Just some of your faves that, you know, you've had an opportunity to taste and drink and, you know, be able to get regularly. Is there anything you've been loving?
I mean, you know, as far as a, like label and a particular
or
wine.
Type,
I try
region,
a region. I mean, I would say Bierzo. You know, I love Mencias from Bierzo. Bierzo is Bierzo. And Mencia, which is the grape, is
Mencia.
Yes, is lighter bodied, right? I mean, people, they relate it to Pinot Noir depending on how it's prepared. You know, if it's done, you know, with, you know, less oak and really bright and clean and lighter bodied red. I love that because I love a red that's lighter, has some acidity. I feel like I can drink it all day, enjoy it with, you know, by itself or with food. It pairs with a wider range of things. So that's my go-to.
That's a great grape. And that's a great recommendation. Bierzo.
So, Katie, you and Felix have taken groups of people to actually travel through Spain before. Why do you guys plan those trips, and what do you hope people learn about the food and the drink of Spain?
Absolutely. So this is our second year, and Felix is the tour guide. He's from Spain. He speaks the language. He's native there, and he's definitely the one to do it.
Take a group?
We do, of 12 to 16 people. Okay. It's Curate Trips, spelled like curatetrips.com.
I love that.
And we have four different itineraries planned for this year, and we take people across many different regions. They enjoy all different kinds of wine and food, and because we've created so many amazing relationships with producers Spain.
An insider's trip.
Yes, we show up, and we're like best friends with the
winery. When's the next one? I'm going.
We have one in May. And then September, October, and November, we have some others that we're planning. And you know what's been so cool is Felix has even found some wines and discovered new things that he's made some partnerships with some importers to bring in some unique things that even we're only selling in our restaurant.
That's the benefit you have.
Yes.
I mean, in a way, you're working it, but it's fun and work.
It's a lot of fun.
But you're out there meeting, and there's always new people, you know, looking to come to the States or representation. Kat may know the answer to this, but I don't, and I think our listeners would like to know the story. How did you meet Felix?
I met him working for Jose Andres in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And then from there, you know, he was coming because he'd been working at El Bulli, one of the best restaurants in the world for, you know, he worked there for 5 years in front of the house service. And I met him and he basically took me back to El Bulli, was like, you want to work in the best restaurant in the world? I was like, yes, please. And live in Spain with you. Meanwhile, I love you. This is perfect. So I went and we worked, you know, I worked two seasons at El Bulli and, you know, which is in Rosas, which is in Catalonia on that Costa Brava, which is where I got so familiar with the wines of that area.
Were you swept off your feet?
Yes.
The first couple of times you met him? Okay.
Yes.
So it was love after all of that.
It was.
Cool. Well, Katie, we know you have to get to the stage, so we'll let you go. But thanks for, on a whim, coming by and talking to us about Spanish wine. This has been really fun.
And I got to get down there and drink through all those wines. And I'm going to stay in touch with you because I'm going to do one of those trips at some
point. Please
do. It sounds like the best.
Please do. All
thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll be back after a short break.
Thanks. Hi, we're back. We're back at the Heritage Radio Network Teepee, right in the middle of the Culinary Village, live from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. We're sitting here doing a special edition Grape Nation. I'm with my pal, Kat Johnson from Heritage Radio Network. Hello,
hey,
Kat.
Hey, Sam.
How are you?
I'm good. So, Sam, I want to ask you, what have you been up to all weekend? We've seen you a little bit here and there. You've been here in the teepee an hour a day or so. But what have you been up to in the afternoons?
Well, it's interesting because we've done about a little under 70 shows for the Grape Nation. And last year I had the good fortune to come down to the festival. And Heritage was a media partner. And, you know, we did the same thing this year. So I decided to come down. But I hooked up with some friends and we participated in some of the events. I was just at a breakfast this morning with Jessica Harris spoke. It was called Harlem and Hominy. And it was sort of a gospel brunch. And it was a walk around with some great chefs. A couple of our guests here, Shannon Sasser was there. And
Savannah Sasser.
What did I say?
Shannon.
And was it Bill Marlowe?
Thomas Marlowe.
I didn't get one.
You're good with last names.
Right. Thomas Marlowe was there. So it was a walk-around format. I did a thing called Shucked, which was on the waterfront in northern Charleston, which was basically a seafood, oyster-centric, wine, eating crazy frenzy for 3 hours. So that was fun with live music. Friday night, I did a thing called Noteworthy on the docks on Shem Creek. And it was Michael Anthony who sent his assistant chef Suzanne and Mike Latta were out cooking, making local indigenous stuff. They were cooking shrimp that came off the boats that were right on the docks. And we did the Edna effect, which Kerry from Cherry Bomb and Jessica Harris were there. It was about Edna Lewis and her effect on Southern cooks. Mishama Bailey and all these people were there. So it was fun, besides doing shows and talking to all our guests and being at the teepee, to get out there and just see the passion, you know, that all these chefs and, you know, the events that Charleston people put out there.
What have been some really interesting wines that you've had while you've been in Charleston?
Well, we had Friday, we had a guest on. Doug Flemmer from Virginia. I didn't drink a lot of Virginia wine, so I got a chance to drink through some Virginia wines. That was interesting. The quality of the wines have been pretty good. There's been a lot of, my thing lately has been sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of champagne and sparkling wine around from Virginia, from Cremant in France, from Champagne. So that's been fun, and that stuff goes great with shellfish and local fish and all of that. So pretty much that stuff. Trying to stay away from the heavy red and, you know, all that stuff.
The weather's too nice for that.
Yeah, it is too nice for that. And the food is more conducive to, you know, that type of wine. But there's a ton of wine in the village. There's a lot of places to stop and really sample different wines. And all the events feature different wines, which is really nice. I mean, it's... For me, it's a very, very, and I'll make it three varies, a very wine-centric, you know, event. I mean, it's part of the name, but they live up to the hype as far as the diversity of wines. So that was nice.
Can I ask you if there is anything you've enjoyed drinking other than wine, if that's allowed on the Grape Nation?
Wait, say that again?
Have you drank anything this weekend other than wine that you've enjoyed?
There's a Guinness booth on the other side.
Uh-oh.
And they had like six different Guinnesses, four of which I never heard of. And the first round was so good, I did a second round. So basically it was six times two, it was like 12 Guinnesses. So that was kind of cool. There's a bunch of great local craft beer guys, so I did that. And there's all these local and regional spirits guys, like High Wire Distillery, and some local gins and all that. So I've been tasting that. The problem is, when I go to wine tastings, I spit. Because you're tasting 80. It sounds gross, but it's everybody does it. But here I'm swallowing and I'm having trouble, you know, kind of getting around. So I got to be careful with all that. So, but yeah, there's a good, pretty good range of beers and spirits here too.
Well, after this show, you're off air for the rest of the festival. So are you gonna like get to tasting right away?
I think that whatever I missed, whatever I didn't see, from the minute I get off the air, I'm hitting it hard.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Watch out, Charleston.
Because I got nowhere to be until tomorrow at noon for my flight. So I'll take it from there. Yeah, no, to your point, I mean, you know, we've all been working hard all weekend, and I'm pretty much done after this show. So I think I'm going to take in a little of it, not worrying that, you know, I have a show or whatever. So that'll be fun.
What are your plans for this afternoon?
I think I'm going to... I think we did our last event, which was Harlem and Hominy. I think I'm going to spend a little more time at the Culinary Village and then maybe walk around town a little. You know, we've all been so inside the village. Let me see what the outside world looks like.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much going to be it.
And you've spent time in Charleston, like, other times of the year besides the festival. What are your impressions of Charleston on like a normal weekend, and then compared that to these crazy, amazing wine and food weekends?
Well, there's two answers to that. One answer is my youngest son went to college at Charleston for 4 years. So I had the luxury of coming down here 2-3 times a year to visit him. And it's one of those cities you really like to visit. So you get to know the restaurants, the scene, the waterfront, and the history and all of that. But one of the things I've observed is the growth. When we got here, King Street is, I guess, the main drag with all the bars and restaurants. It used to end at a certain point. Now it just goes north forever. And friends of ours, Femi and Miles, are opening a wine bar, Graft, a great wine store, Monarch, opened up. And he's bringing in smaller producer natural wines. Rick Rubel, who was here yesterday, is a Charleston place. He has a bigger wine list, you know, as anywhere. And... But sort of since then, not with the college, it's just trying to keep up with the restaurant and even, you know, the nightclub scene and all of that. And it's just growing so fast. I think you see that from last year to this year, right?
Yeah.
So it's been very cool that way. We've enjoyed that.
Yeah. Yeah, you sent me an article very recently about how Charleston's wine scene is really exploding.
It was one of those 0 to 0, like there was 1 or 2 wine-centric places. Now, in less than a year, 3 or 4 legitimate places with legitimate people, with legitimate product and visions, you know, are out there for this market to enjoy. Because as good a restaurant market as this is, it wasn't that good of a wine market. And now you have the people and the places. Mm-hmm. So that I think that's a big step forward. And we're going to go and sample some of those places later on, too.
I'm jealous. I have to hang around for a little bit
longer.
Well,
I'm talking when the show ends and all that, at 5 and everything.
Yeah. Well, Sam, thanks for letting me be a guest/guest host on The Grape Nation. It's been fun
being a guest. We're back up in New York this coming Wednesday on The Grape Nation. We have a great guest, Piero Antinori, who's 7-8 generations of Italian winemaking. He's one of the patriarchs of all Italian wine. He'll be on, and that'll be fun, and we'll see you when we get back there.
See you there, Sam.
All right, thank you.